Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A little more than a minute past the hour. This is Tuesday, the 24th day of January 2012. There are 341 days remaining in the year. I only said that because I can do that much math on the fly. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, the Horn, America's liberal voice, heard globally in all sorts of ways via the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com website itself, via iTunes Radio, via Stitcher, via Tuner Internet Radio, via TuneIn Radio. Wow. It's heard directly via WhiteRoseSociety.org. If you want to hear this radio, by golly, there's some manner for you to do it out there. And two or three of those I mentioned, Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, and Stitcher, are all available on your smartphone device, so you can take the horn with you wherever life may take you. Isn't that neat? Yeah. Now, so it's Tuesday, and I guess we've got the State of the Union to contend with tonight. Maybe we'll break it. Now, it probably starts at 9, doesn't it? Yeah, well, but maybe we can talk about what we expect and don't expect out of the State of the Union. And a lot of other things as well. Here at the top of the program, a lot of thanks for the effort that it took to make sure that we took care of last night's fundraising needs. We need to do something like that every night just to keep things on the air, roughly $60 to $100 a night, and that takes care of what it takes to, you know, keep the donuts getting made here. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address, and whether you use PayPal or snail mail, you are equally a part in the process of keeping this all afloat, and it is sincerely appreciated. Now, where to begin tonight? Well, you know, I mentioned at the top of the program, this is the horn. This is the Head On Radio Network. See, Head On Radio Network, horn, spells horn, which means something. And the process whereby the idea of the horn was conceived goes a ways back now, before ever I got behind the microphone. It goes back to when this was all just a conceptual discussion between Boss Man Wayne and myself. It goes back to, oh, God, October, September of 2003? Yeah, almost 10 years ago. And we were thinking in terms of, you know, what do we call the name of the show? And I want you to know right now that it had absolutely nothing to do with that huckster patent medicine that involved things applied to the head. Actually, it had to do with something. He was still around back then. It had to do with something I heard my father say, making a reference to the fact that Republicans and conservatives and such like are dead from the neck up. They have no brains. I guess that makes them zombies, but no, that wasn't the word that was in consideration. They have no brains. They have no heads. And this gives you a little picture of what my thought creative process is like. So we went from, okay, so the Republicans have their heads off because they operate with their hearts and not their minds. They operate with their beliefs and not their knowledge. Well, perhaps we would make this a radio show about people who have their heads on. And that we would go at issues straight on, straight up. No beating around the bush, no punches pulled, kind of like a head-on collision. That we would, then we would take the right wing on head-on. And Radio Network simply followed. So it was the Head-On Radio Network. And that was nice because it also spelled something. It spelled horn. And a horn is something that you use to disseminate a message. You really didn't want to hear me sneeze. That's hence the pregnant pause there. But so it was kind of a double whammy. You had, and trust me, there's a reason for all of this. You had on the one hand a philosophical statement of how the show would proceed, and you also had an acronym spelling something that talked about how we would widely disseminate the idea, the conversation. The idea of conversation radio, as opposed to talk radio, was also percolating along in there roughly about the same time. And like I said, that was September or October of 2003. By February 2004, we had taken to the terrestrial airwaves in America's fifth smallest radio market, introducing people to the concept of head-on radio. That's why it's spelled H, little E, little A, little D, hyphen, big O, big N, capital O, capital N. Right. But it's worked because it's catchy and it's easy for people to remember. And so that means it was an effective choice of name. And you want that, because this all ties into marketing and the ability to get people to identify with your brand. And, you know, Rick Santorum has had a name problem for a while now. Ever since he created the whole man-on-dog controversy, comparing gay folks to, or gay folks wanting to get married to, aberrant humans wanting to have sex with animals. Within the whole gay marriage scenario, I'm not sure who's the animal and who's the human, and the frothy mixture's weird little world. But he did. He created a problem, and Dan Savage punished him for it by redefining his name, his last name, Santorum, as a word describing a frothy mixture of, and you can go do the rest on the Google. Around here, we call him, Rick Santorum, Bro Fromix. Brother Frothy Mixture. Or sometimes we just call him the Frothy One. That's frothy. And yet he's doing reasonably well among the weirdest of the weird in the Republican world. But God, if there be a God, is a God of irony, who, having created humanity, is enjoying quite the chuckle at our expense every day. In the shortest poem he ever composed, Robert Frost once said, "Forgive, O Lord, my little jokes on thee, and I'll forgive thy great big one on me." I think Robert Frost recognized that God is a God of irony. And so Rick Santorum has the whole frothy mixture thing problem working on him. But at the same time, he also needs to raise funds. And in the common parlance, fundraising a massive amount of quickly generated funds for a political campaign is, in, again, the irony of the times, referred to as a money bomb, whereby one may use political capital raised, or financial capital raised politically, to bomb one's opponent. Curious how we just can't avoid the eliminationist imagery, isn't it? So Rick Santorum needed a money bomb. Now, we all know about that Supreme Court case that a couple of years ago changed the political landscape by making unlimited corporate money available inside the political process. It was a horrible decision, and it was a decision born out of the desires of a right-wing hate group that opposes Americans' right to privacy. Get hold of that. Get hold of that meme, would you? Sandra mentioned it in the email to me yesterday, pointing out the fact that Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, was on his way to the March for Life. Sandra said he was on his way to an anti-privacy rally. You know, we've wrestled with this for a long time, and it's, you know, they're pro-life and we're pro-choice. And that's kind of a failed image. This is one that sticks, because now that they've come out and said that they really are, they're after Griswold versus Connecticut, which establishes the right to privacy, the lines are much more clearly drawn, and Sandra noticed it immediately and pointed out the fact that they are anti-personal privacy and we are pro-privacy. A lot easier to be pro-privacy, isn't it? So there's the working meme. But anyway, the name of the organization was Citizens United. You know that from the Supreme Court case, and they are anti-privacy, and they are right-wing, and they are conservative. So that's all a really big popular element within the right-wing world. And so much, I offered the story of the genesis of the horn's name, as a way of showing you how one goes from point A to point L in creating something like that. And the same thing happened with the Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum campaign. They had a money bomb, or wanted to have a money bomb, and they wanted to tap into something that was identifiable and catchy within the right-wing universe. And they settled on Citizens United. Consequently, the fundraising effort, I'm not kidding, you probably already know this, the fundraising effort for Rick Santorum really, really, really is called, I'll go slow so you can do the acronym at home, the Frothy Mixtures Money Bomb is Citizens Unite. Conservatives Unite Money Bomb. That's right. Rick Santorum wants to come all over Newt Gingrich, Ron Paul, and Willard Romney. Have they gotten around to fixing this yet? Did the light go on for them? Because remember, it was also Rick Santorum who wanted to bogart Langston Hughes's Let America Be America Again. This is a tone-deaf man. Well, no, it's still loading that way. Conservatives Unite, Money Bomb. C-U-M. Of course, you can just hear a little clueless frothy mixture, the frothy one saying, Well, that's just Latin for with. No, no, they haven't fixed it yet. No, the light has not gone on for them yet. There it is, spelling sort of in a diagonal oblique fashion down from the upper left corner of the website. C-U-M. Makes me want to give them $5. If I can send a message. Yes, Rick, I want to come with you. This was noticed early on. Sandra saw it, as did our good buddy Michael, occasionally known as Kid A from the chat room. Bob, I assume you've seen this by now, but just in case you've missed it, ricksantorum.com/unite. Go there and play the Make the Obvious acronym game in your brain. I can't believe they haven't retitled this yet. It just seems to me that Money Shot would be more appropriate than Money Bomb. Oh, that is a witty one, Michael. In any case, Money Shot. Conservatives unite, Money Shot. In any case, I've never seen such a frothy fundraiser, Michael says. I guess when you're trying to come up from behind in the polls, looking for an opening, you've got to grease the wheels since it's going to be tight. Sorry. Signed, Michael. Santorum wants supporters C.U.M. Yeah. Thanks, Shorty, for an early contribution that takes care of a big part of this evening's fundraising. It is much appreciated. Is Rick Santorum just so pure of heart that it never occurred to him that that was a fairly well-known slang for one of the components of the... because it is one of the components of the frothy mixture that his name now means. Kind of reminds me in a way of Darren McGavin in A Christmas Story with that big box arriving at the door. Huh! Must be Italian! Fragile! Conservatives unite. Money bomb. Money shot. I'm with Michael. I'm kind of conflicted, and I think money shot works a lot better. Yeah, Ray. Probably so. Ray writing in. Got to be some bacon lube in there somewhere. Conservatives unite, money bomb. How did they miss that? I mean, that's almost, well, perhaps more outrageous than back when the Bush administration put the first name on its war against the people of Iraq. Remember what they originally wanted to call it? It wasn't always Operation Iraqi Freedom. It started out your Operation Iraqi Liberation. O-I-L. But the communications team there at least caught on and said, wait, no, stop it. That spells oil. No. Fine. So freedom. Everybody likes freedom. Operation Iraqi Freedom. Let's see. But they... And the next question is, does any member of the for-profit 1% media have the nerve to say, Mr. Santorum, for a number of years now, you've had a problem with your last name because it has been defined as, shall we say, a frothy mixture. Do you realize that the political fundraising device that you've just set up is also something equally pornographic, Mr. Santorum? You with your family values and 19 children and little aborted fetuses taken home in a box and shown to the children and told that that was their brother. And do you realize that, Mr. Santorum? It spells what? Well, you know, Mr. Santorum, that thing you can only do if you're going to make a baby, otherwise the Pope says you're going to hell. Because you buy into all of that malarkey. A shot. Now, we're sure you've never done that anywhere except where God wants you to, Mr. Santorum, but Mr. Santorum, you need to go look up Money Shot. Look up Fluffer while you're at it. It's all there in the Urban Dictionary, Mr. Santorum. The evolution of a name goes all the way back to Shakespeare and the argument. It's from Romeo and Juliet, isn't it? What's in a name? What's in a name indeed? In that particular name is half of the componentry of a Santorum. Golly, Ned. But there's not just that. There's an abundance of stuff to get after this evening. That one just spoke to me, though, simply because, A, Michael had written something very funny about it, and I got to thinking about how it was that we came up with the name for the horn. And bang, there we were. Now, everybody knows that Rick Santorum is a friend of the fetus. He liked one so much that even at 20 weeks, he, like I said, brought it home and passed it around for show and tell with his little children, who probably still wake up screaming in the middle of the night with nightmares over it. Take it away, Daddy. But there is what do you call it? What do you call it on the right wing? The cult of the fetus? And by cult, I don't mean they're skipping around in robes in airports soliciting money. I mean it in its anthropological sense, or its social sciences sense. But there is a cult of the fetus in this country, led in large part politically by the frothy one himself. But now, he has competition. Boldly announced. Naturally, for this, we have to go to the state of Oklahoma. Of course, Oklahoma. By the way, our chat room moderator, Lottie, noting, in honor of Rick Santorum, I came up with a new toy for the kiddies, Mr. Potato Fetus. I guess you really can't put the mustache on Mr. Potato Fetus. Fetus is not old enough for it. Hey, you hear them liberals? They make fetus jokes. That just goes to show how godless they are, don't it? Making jokes about poor little innocent fetuses. I only wish I could get that little whistle going. Fetus. And see, I can't do it. No, there's competition in the world of fetus fetishization. See, I didn't even say it right on the first time through, and I'm not even drinking yet. Fetus fetishization. Fetus fetishization. Fetus fetishization. There's competition in the world of fetus fetishization. Don't try that at home. I am, after all, a trained professional. And we have to go to Oklahoma for it. And again, that god of irony just... So, will somebody please build a temple? Because this deity is active. Granted, we're not rubbing out people with lightning bolts or anything anymore. I had a note from our buddy Tosh, who said that somewhere along the way, let's see, he said, from what I've seen, heard, and read, all of the right-to-life movements, you know, the anti-privacy people, all of their references address specific individual humans of importance to the plans of God. Jesus, John the Baptist, David, various other prophets. Those are the ones that they talk about life beginning at conception for. Everybody else gets a different standard. Tosh notes, none of those references explicitly apply to all humanity. Not a single one. I recently read an estimate that the Old Testament includes descriptions of the deaths of 1.2 million people at the command of or by the hand of God. Tosh says the anti-privacy right-to-life movement is selling logically easy and emotionally satisfying pablum that human life is sacred. In the teaching of Christ, wide is the road, narrow is the path. Anything that is logically easy and emotionally satisfying is suspect. Where in love thy enemy is the easy logic or emotional lift? Oh, Tosh, you're onto something. He says, when God was writing the rules, by their estimation, he did not make mechanically causing a miscarriage, effectively an abortion up to 21 weeks, a capital offense, meaning there is no humanity in that life at that point, Exodus 21:22. Also, the rite of circumcision, causing identification of an infant as a human member of the tribe of Israel, doesn't occur until 8 days after birth. Why not immediately upon birth, as we heathens do? In counting the people of Israel, God told the kings, including David, to not count infants under 30 days old. Tosh concludes, they are worshiping an idol, and it is called human life. They've made it sacred, which violates at least three of the Ten Commandments. As Paul said, our lives are rubbish compared to the glory of God, but these twits are making rubbish sacred. Tosh says, our pastor recently came up with an interesting alternative to the usual sanctity of life sermon. He's been losing weight recently, so he spoke about living healthy lives, a tweak I can't object to, says Tosh. So, yeah. The god of irony, as opposed to the old smite and juvenile delinquent in the sky god of the Old Testament, it remains quite busy, having moved his moving, its moving appendage, noodly or otherwise, in Oklahoma of late, where one Ralph Shorty... No, really, that's Shorty with an E and a Y, I guess I have to add. Ralph Shorty has introduced Senate Bill 1418. Yes, Ralph Shorty has risen to be a state senator in Oklahoma, which apparently is not much of a climb. Ralph Shorty has introduced Senate Bill 1418 in the state Senate of Oklahoma, which would forbid sit down, strap in, I kid you not, fetus eating. There I go, I did it again. 6:29 p.m. on the 24th of January, 2012, and I've ruined somebody's dinner or lunch or somewhere or something. And maybe, I don't know, Tracy's was just pulling up to the taco truck there in L.A. after during a long day of driving cab, and I'm gonna get me one of those shrimp tacos, and then I'm going to torment Bob on the air about it, and he's going to wish he can have him a shrimp taco. Oh, eating fetuses? One strawberry tart with not so much fetus in it. Later. Yeah, there's Scott and Linda up there. doing, as is their wont, preparing their evening meal up in Massachusetts. Honey, did you rinse? Have you rinsed the lettuce yet? Oh, absolutely. Pass the radicchio and hold up on the fetus. I'm not kidding. Ralph Shorty of Oklahoma, that's Senator Ralph Shorty of Oklahoma, is all head up about the possibility that we're going, because there's so many things you can do with them, don't you know? There's fetus and weenies. I mean, there's the New England boiled fetus dinner. Fetus fritters. French fried fetus. Or, you can brine pack them, and the little bones are crunchy just like sardines because they're so young, you know. Here's the text of his bill. No person or entity. The hell's an entity? I guess that would be a partnership or something, because a corporation is a person now, so no person would just take care of, you know, the walking, living, breathing, former fetus, living people, as well as the corporate people. No person or entity shall manufacture or knowingly sell food or any other product intended for human consumption. Got to sort that one out maybe in a little bit. Food or any other product intended for human consumption. Fetus cola! Which contains aborted human fetuses in the ingredients, or which used aborted human fetuses in the research or development of any of the ingredients. Let's see, I got my studio bottle of Listerine here. Keep it handy for just such an occasion. Let's see. Ingredients. Inactive ingredients. Water, sorbitol solution, alcohol, 21.6%. That means it's 43.2 proof. Flavors. Well, I wonder if there's any fetus hiding in that flavoring. Poloxamer 407, sodium lauryl sulfate, phosphoric acid, just like Coca-Cola. Sucralose, dibasic, sodium phosphate, FDNC red number 40, FDNC blue number 1, fetus number 12. Not really. Hey, Grandpa! What's for supper? Fricasseed fetus. Now, there's only one problem, and it's similar to the problem Oklahoma has with Sharia law. To wit, no kidding, Oklahoma passed a law making it verboten for Sharia law to be used in the state of Oklahoma. Upon being stricken down by the court, it was noted that there were never any examples cited of Sharia law having ever been even remotely likely to have been used in Oklahoma. So too, with fetus flambé. Oh, the lovely, lovely covering of meringue run, and you run it under the broiler until the meringue gets a little bit brown, and then you bring it out. The fetus is so tasty. No, there's nowhere in Oklahoma or anywhere else that anybody's a munching on any fetus frittatas. And I got a million of them. You knew that one of these days all that food porn was going to pay off here. Fetus on a stick. Over at Foolocracy, 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 Glenn Church's Foolocracy, foolocracy.com. Glenn Church writes, Shorty's idea that a bill is needed because there is an epidemic of fetus snacks being sold around the country, wolf nipple chips, is absolutely ludicrous and false. He is simply trying to stir passions against stem cell research, aha, which is the real intent of the bill. The specific issue is a rumor, urban legend, you know, Snopesy kind of stuff, floating around the internet from a Florida-based group called, and you know, if a group like this starts a rumor, you can pretty much run to the bank on the fact that it is total, complete, and utter Santorum. The Florida-based group Children of God for Life that claims HEK-293, a line from human embryonic cells, is being used in testing to enhance flavors. Soylent Green is fetus! Once again, Glenn Church writes, no one is grinding up human fetuses and putting them into some special recipe with seven herbs and spices that's being sold to food companies to make an irresistible product for human taste. No, that's high fructose corn syrup. Oh my God, maybe it's really high fetus corn syrup. We have to be vigilant. Because them liberals, they don't care nothing about life. The company at question in this legislation is a company called Sonomics. S-E-N-O-M-Y-X. Sonomics is not even located, notes Glenn Church, in the state of Oklahoma. Lucky for them. And they may even be using HEK-293, but a whole bunch of other research labs developing better medicines and other products are doing the same thing. As Glenn Church points out, swallowing a pill derived from testing that involved HEK-293 is no different than eating a food product. Except it is. There's a big difference between, then add a tablespoon of Skippy peanut butter and a line of cells being used to generate some potentially life-saving medication. This is what happens when people who don't understand science get a hold of science. Glenn Church noting, HEK-293 was developed in the 1970s from human embryonic kidney cells grown in tissue culture. It's very easy to grow and has been used in cell biology research for decades. There are many products on the market based on using this research. No one has proposed banning those. So here's what's really going on, and it comes from the Miami New Times, and consequently that explains why the Florida-based group Children of God for Life has gotten a hold of this. Miami New Times writes, Gwen Rosenberg, a vice president of investor relations and corporate communications for Sonomics, described the process as, quote, basically a robotic tasting system. She depicted rows of little plastic square dishes with hundreds of tiny indentations in each dish. A protein is placed in each indentation, then a flavor. If the protein reacts to the flavor, the results are charted. If the new flavor, of which the company has more than 800,000, is successful with the protein test, the company then conducts taste tests with live adult humans. The goal is to reduce... Look! The goal is to reduce MSG, sugar, and salt, and thus making healthier foods. And out of this wildly attenuated process, you get Senator Shorty, Ralph Shorty, Mr. and Mrs. Shorty had a baby and they named him Ralph. I guess they could have named him Sam and that would have been worse. Or Stretch. Or fetus. You know, I think these pro-fetus people should start naming their fetuses fetus. Fetus, come here. Fetus Fullernoy, don't make me call you twice. You just go ahead and take a switch and cut a switch and bring it on in here. I'm going to whoop you, fetus. Fetus Ray, I swear, sometimes you try my patience. Bubba Fetus? Well, that's almost Star Wars-y, isn't it? No, Glenn Church noting, the real goal behind this legislation by Shorty is to continue the war against science and put an end to any embryonic cell research. He is simply trying to rile up people's fears and disgust with an utterly ridiculous claim that there needs to be a ban on eating fetuses. That is the part that is disgusting. Because it... Oh, for heaven's sakes. I thought of one of my favorite pieces of historical fiction is a brilliant book by a man named Gary Jennings called Aztec. Everything that comes after it, except the one immediately after it, Aztec Autumn, leave those alone. Those were ghost-written, and they're caca. But Aztec is a brilliant historical reimagining of the last days of the Mexica Empire, with a wandering protagonist named Mishtli, who at one point in time finds himself wandering northward away from Tenochtitlan and in the desert with the Chichimeca people. And they're sitting around having their evening meal, and he says it was delicious. And he says to them, "What are we having?" And they say, "Baby." And he says, "It's wonderful. Baby what?" And they say, "Baby." And within the context of the book, it's not at all disgusting. But there is no context in which Ralph Shorty, Senator Ralph Shorty, "Oh, Daddy, he's made us so proud. We ain't never had a senator in our family before." Well, I know, Mama Shorty. Senator Ralph Shorty makes a mockery of human experience. Makes a mockery of the Soylent Green movie, for that matter. I mean, after all, there's something kind of tender and touching about Charlton Heston chasing the freshly dead body of Edward G. Robinson through the process whereby he becomes little green crackers that are fed to the starving masses of an overpopulated planet, screaming at the end, "Soylent! Soylent Green is people! You better watch your ass, mister. Some hotshot pilot's going to flame your ass." But this... You know that... Because they're making flavorings out of fetuses. Jack in Shreveport noting by email, "Santorum Web, I think they may have decided to go with their present wording since money shot would imply a small caliber weapon, while what they now have is equipped with a bomb." Corey in the Free State of Louisville. "Fetus food? Does it go well with cheese and bacon? Everything is better with cheese and bacon." And it is. Hence the bacon lube reference back a few minutes in the show from our buddy Ray, who also has come up with another acronym, SCUM. This would describe your average right-winger. Sexually confused, unfeeling mutants. Ta-da! "Mm-mm, good," says Ray. "Pop-Tarts, this is an effing sick conversation." Yes, it is. And naturally, it was engendered by a right-winger. Because they're effing sick. Well, I think in another life, Ray has worked in the marketing industry. Frosted Fetus Flakes! Oh, look! Marty got the Midway reference. Better watch it, mister. Some hotshot pilot's gonna flavor your ass. Marty says, and I love Midway, too. Frosted Fetus Flakes, Ray, that really, really, really does have potential. But he also observes, truly, they will use any distractions to avoid the true message of Jesus. So, oh, and the chat room's hard at work, too. Fetus Hot Pockets. Fockets. Ooh. Benedict at Large noting, I just put a knockoff image of Santorum's cum page upon the Horn Facebook page if anyone wants to share it around. Oh, beautiful, beautiful. And Lottie noting, at least all this, don't eat, please, please don't eat the fetuses. Keeps them occupied so that they're not out there killing cats. True. And yes, yes, Lottie, you do have to come up with a fetus dipping sauce now. Well, I think we have a winner with Fockets. I didn't mean for the show to... Well, I guess I did mean for the show to get off with a start. Because when your show starts with the Conservatives Unite Money Bomb Money Shot, where the hell can it go from there? I mean, at that point, it's going to be hard to serious it up again. But we've got a really great speech coming up tonight, and you know it'll be a great speech. It's basically Barack Obama's, President Obama's kickoff for, it's his kickoff speech for the campaign. And God knows he's got material to work with. I sat there and I went back and forth between the layover Los Angeles and the pageant in Tampa. NBC made those teabaggers behave. There wasn't any hooting or hollering going on, and Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich did not have his laugh track. No, the usually before big speeches like this, the text has been released so folks know generally what's going to be in it. You know that. And so the headlines are that the State of the Union address will be ambitious. Yeah, it begins at 9 Eastern time, so we don't have to take up any of this program listening to it. No, he will. That's what they're saying. It's going to be ambitious, and he will lay out a blueprint for an economy built to last. If it's built on capitalism, it will not, of course, be built to last. It will be ultimately built to collapse. Because that's what capitalism does, because it eats itself. But we do. We've got a Jim Dandy next couple of hours of conversation ahead, I hope. You know, on the one hand, we've got Fockets, Fetus Pockets. And on the other... Well, a movie reference, because most people in the Horn family have seen this film. I've seen it about 500 times. Idiocracy. Idiocracy. Set 500 years in the future, it's actually a rather biting satire upon our present. And it features, among other things, the idea that corporations have so thoroughly taken over government that everything is subject to corporate sponsorship.
What?
Yeah, we're going to have some crappy audio off of that. You know, you've got, in Idiocracy, you've got, welcome to Costco, I love you, and you've got the dispenser, well, this.
Enjoy your extra big ass fries.
You didn't give me no fries, I got an empty box.
Would you like another?
Extra big ass fries.
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please what? Come back when you can afford to make
no,
a purchase.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry you have
come on. My kids are starving.
This should help you calm down. Please come back when you can afford to make a purchase. Your kids are starving. Carl's Jr. believes no child should go hungry. You are an unfit mother. Your children will be placed in the custody of Carl's Jr. Carl's Jr. Fuck you. I'm eating. Welcome to Carl's Jr. Would you like to try our...
extra...
extra big-ass fries. And, of course, later in the film, a member of the moronic cabinet... finds himself saying, brought to you by Carl's Jr., about every 15 seconds or less in the scene. And guess what? It may be coming true. Really? Of course, it's a... conservative family values Christian governor that wants to make it come true. Governor Bob McDonnell, who I believe graduated from the Draw Spunky School of University of Pat Roberts and Jerry Falwell Regency, whatever, Patrick Henry. Governor Bob McDonnell of Virginia proposes to sell the naming rights for the state of Virginia's bridges and highways in order to generate funds for road maintenance. No, this is not from The Onion. This is for real. Because it's already going on. The article from the LA Times noting that station in Philadelphia is already named AT&T Station. Legislation to allow school boards in Florida to sell the naming rights for their school cafeterias, brought to you by Carl's Jr. F you! I'm eating! Has already been introduced in the legislature there. Max R. Ashburn of Scenic America, a Washington, D.C. group that monitors this kind of thing, says, my initial reaction is that the thought of my GPS telling me to take the Starbucks bridge and make a right onto Burger King Drive is rather depressing and would represent yet more ceding of public space to private interests. Well, yes, absolutely, Max R. Ashburn of Scenic America. That's the whole point. in the free market, anarcho-randian, hyper-capitalist wonderland, there is no public space anymore. It's all up for grabs. Everything, every last square centimeter. Trying to be forward-thinking here, not say an inch. The worker for Public Citizen, Elizabeth Ben Ishai, said the proposal would turn the state into a marketer working on behalf of corporate interests. You know, we used to, and we still do around here, name our bridges and highways after war heroes, people who have given greatly to the state. You know, in Morgantown, West Virginia, home of West Virginia University, otherwise known as Harvard on the Mon, my alma mater, one may proudly drive down Don Knotts Boulevard. Not kidding. Because Don Knotts was a proud son of Morgantown who gave countless, literally countless hours of laughter to America and the world. Nip it! Well, the Emancipation Proclamation, Ange, was a proclamation about emancipation. That's what it was. Don Knotts Boulevard. Thank God it's not in Virginia. Don Knotts Boulevard might be renamed Carl's Jr. Boulevard. F you, I'm eating. Or perhaps Brondo. That's where we're going. It's not science fiction anymore, is it? At least not as far as I can tell. Jeff Caldwell is the press secretary for Bob McDonnell, fundamentalist governor of Virginia. Bob McDonnell doesn't believe that evolution ever happened. Good look at Bob McDonnell and you understand why. Virginia is looking for all innovative funding methods that can help address our transportation needs without raising taxes on our citizens during these difficult economic times. Virginia transportation officials would establish the rules, including how much the state should charge a corporation for naming rights, if the state's General Assembly gives the green light to the governor's proposal. Elizabeth Ben Ishai said, "It sends the message to citizens that every aspect of their state is for sale, undermining the value and virtues of public space." Yes, Elizabeth! Yes! That's by design. The Golden Arches Bridge. Isn't the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, isn't that part of Virginia? That could be a whole bunch of golden arches. Couldn't it? Jiminy Christmas. A little too much, isn't it? How did we get here? Where did... I mean, did some Republican somewhere sit down one night, watch Idiocracy, never laughed, never cracked a smile, and thought they were watching some sort of documentary? Wait a minute, what? Oh, we could... We could sell the right to name a road. But you know what? It wouldn't be. I mean, the reference to Starbucks and Carl's Jr. No. You know how that would go. It would be the Keystone XL Highway. It would be, for instance, down in say Wise County, Virginia, where in excess of 25% of that county has been eliminated, rubbed out, blown away. The main highway running through there could be changed to the Alpha Natural Resources, Scenic Natural Resources, American Energy Security, Coal Keeps the Lights On Future Highway. That's who will buy this kind of crap up. You know it's true, right? So that closes out the evening's filibobster. It's about a minute past 7 here on the East Coast. Your conversation, your participation is both welcome and hoped for. You know the number. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Toll free, it is 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. We'll pay the freight if you can't afford to. That's how important the conversation is to us. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, January 24, 2012.
American energy, fueled by homegrown and alternative energy sources.
That sounds to me like the same old policies we've seen.
State of the Union energy facts versus fiction.
You want the payroll tax cut? The pipeline goes with it.
All options are on the table.
Keystone XL pipeline fight redux. The hottest Arctic on record. Radioactive rice in Japan. Plus, forget Fukushima. Is nuclear's bad reputation caused by...
Bond. James Bond.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I think it's pathetic.
Who asked you, John Boehner? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Taz, I'm very happy today because, A, we've got James Bond in the Green News Report.
Yes.
And, B, today happens to be the Brad Blog's 8th anniversary. So, happy birthday to you.
And happy birthday to you, too.
Thank you very much. What do you have for us today?
Oh, it's that time again. Washington, D.C. is abuzz.
Because it's the 8th anniversary of the Brad Blog?
No.
Oh.
It's because it's the next episode of Capitol Hill Kabuki Theater, known as the State of the Union Address.
Ah.
President Obama's State of the Union Address occurs amidst the most bizarre Republican presidential primary in recent memory. And according to Democratic Party sources, President Obama will call for an expansion of domestic natural gas drilling. But as you heard, Republicans are already criticizing the speech before it even airs. So here's some pre-bunking and pre-fact-checking to keep in mind. Oil and gas drilling in the U.S. is actually at its highest level in history right now under the Obama administration.
Because he hates energy?
Apparently not. Offshore oil and gas drilling has returned to the record high levels that we saw before the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico.
Because he hates offshore drilling?
Apparently not. And the administration is well on its way to final approval of the first ever deep sea oil drilling in the fragile Arctic.
Because President Obama wants to do everything he can to kill the fossil fuel industry.
Apparently not. But on the other hand, lawmakers who voted in favor of inserting an arbitrary deadline for the Keystone Pipeline into unrelated legislation received a windfall of $42 million in campaign contributions from lobbying groups supporting the pipeline.
Just a coincidence.
Meanwhile, congressional Republicans in Congress are plotting how to respond to the president's denial last week of that Keystone XL pipeline from Canada. On Sunday, Republican Speaker of the House John Boehner told Chris Wallace of Fox News that congressional Republicans may try to force the issue again by, again, withholding another extension of the payroll tax cut for the middle class, which is set to expire in February.
Are you saying that you may link the Keystone Pipeline to extending the payroll tax holiday?
Well, we may. But as I said, all options are on the table.
While Washington fights over drill, baby, drill, the globe continues to warm. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced this week that 2011 was the 9th hottest year on record globally. Now, 2010 tied for the hottest year on record. With 2011 being the 9th hottest year on record, it continues the trend of the last 10 years, all being among the hottest 10 years on record. But in the Arctic, however, 2000 was regionally the hottest year on record. Climate scientists say the Arctic is heating up much faster than the rest of the world. Meanwhile, on the other side of the world in Japan, the Japanese government has announced it will now test for radiation contamination at more than 25,000 rice farms in eastern Fukushima Prefecture, the farming region surrounding the crippled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. The expanded radiation monitoring comes after Japanese rice farmers in the region, believing the Japanese government testing to be inadequate, voluntarily tested their own rice farms for radiation exposure and found many, many rice samples contaminated with radioactive cesium above legal limits, far more than the previous government tests had indicated.
The farmers did their own tests and found this problem because the government did not?
That's correct.
Wow.
Forget Fukushima. Nuclear's bad reputation isn't caused by nuclear accidents, but instead by Bond. James Bond. That's according to the Royal Society of Chemistry in Britain, which caused quite a stir last week.
You mean they were stirred, not shaken?
Indeed they were. They said that the real villain is James Bond, specifically the film Dr. No. In a statement released to coincide with the 50th anniversary of the film's release, they were met with widespread derision in Britain. Here's University College of London professor Tom Burke on the BBC.
The idea that somehow it's Hollywood that's made people sort of skeptical about nuclear power is a bit like thinking, well, it's Hollywood gangster movies that are responsible for crime waves.
Well, actually, we're against crime because we don't like it when we see it in movies, so maybe we're against nuclear energy when we see it in movies as well.
Yeah, pay no attention to that whole Chernobyl thing.
Well, the jury's still out. It's either yes or Dr. No. For more on all of these stories, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Remember, you can download all of our Green News reports at iTunes. You can listen to us via your mobile device on Stitcher Radio. And you can follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
It's an ominous 13 minutes past the hour on this Tuesday, the 24th of January. Our buddy Dr. John in New York following up on the fricasseed fetus story. It says, see what happens when I read the internet? I want to know what sort of internet research this goober was doing. He is referring, of course, to, you know, it's too late for a Moran Monday nomination, but dang. The goober in question is, of course, Senator Ralph Shorty from Oklahoma. This little addendum to the story, I had the LA Times story. John has the Washington Post story. Freshman senator, just trying to get his names out in the paper, you know, being a freshman, you know, they're all the time giving you noogies and stuff there in the Oklahoma Senate and whatnot. Freshman Senator Ralph Shorty said Tuesday that internet research he has conducted led him to believe such a ban on fetus eating is necessary. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration says it's unaware of such a concern. Well, that's because it lives almost exclusively in the head of Senator Ralph Shorty and the Children of Light and God and lighter fluid and stuff in Florida. The Children of Huffing Gasoline for God or what it did, right. They're eating fetuses. Internet research. Don't, Senator Shorty, don't believe everything you read on the interweb tubes. It's not a big truck of truth. Sometimes it's a slippery series of tubes. There's all kinds of stuff out there. I went looking today, as a matter of fact, for the histories of Polybius. And long before I got to any links about the Greek historian who chronicled the rise of the Roman Empire, beginning about 220 before the current era, before I ever got to any links about him, I had a dozen or more links to commentary about an urban legend concerning a video game that popped up in Portland, Oregon, drove people crazy, and then had its data downloaded in the 80s by black overcoat-wearing government agents. I'll bet you, well, I don't know, maybe we need to ban Polybius in Oklahoma too. But the question arises, what if the fetus is a Sharia fetus? Would it be okay to eat it then, or would it need a separate Sharia ban in Oklahoma? You know, it amazes me they have a university or two there. John also noting a little something from Willard Romney today. John works on a newspaper, so he sees as much or more news than I do. So I just saw this on the wire. See the final line. Thing is, all the Republicans feel this way. Romney's just the only one dumb enough to say it. Dateline Lehigh Acres, Florida. Now, here's a photo op I can't imagine anybody thinking would be good for Willard Romney. Republican presidential candidate Mitt, the new, come on, AP, his name's Willard. Republican presidential candidate Willard Romney came to ground zero of the housing crisis to assail rival Newt Gingrich over his ties to a government-backed mortgage company that helped make it worse, which is, of course, entirely likely just BS, because the whole Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac connection to the housing bubble going pop is largely a manufactured one of those things that you find with your internet research when you go over onto the right-wing part of the web, you know, Wingnutistan. Romney continued what's become a habit of comparing companies to people. Romney on Tuesday was standing outside a Fannie Mae foreclosed home in a struggling Florida neighborhood telling a small crowd why they're having so much trouble. That's right, the guy who pays 14% taxation on 40-some-odd million dollars of income in the last 2 years was explaining to folks, why, you know, working people, why they're having trouble. Romney said in his words, in other words, a quote, "The banks aren't bad people. They're just overwhelmed right now." The banks are overwhelmed. Really. Andy noting, please spare me, Bob. Don't make me, well, we won't be listening to the president, Andy. He doesn't come on until 9. Andy says, I don't believe anything out of Mr. Obama's silver-tongued mouth. He gives a great speech, though, great delivery, full of BS for the ill-informed, non-horn listener. I'm just out of hope, says Andy. Kim awoke to a surprise this evening. She said, I did not know the man, referring to the emails I've read from Ray, I did not know the man I love and live with was so demented. I just awoke to this whole fetus conversation. Bob, this is why we love this show. To awake to fetus food is just not right. Hear, hear. Darlene said in an email subject line, changing the memes, Darlene says, Bob soon will be having corporations sponsor the State of the Union address, where the sitting president has to say the corporate sponsor's name just before launching into his or her speech. Okay, time out. It's already happened, Darlene. You may recall after the overweening, overarching, relentless, remorseless greed of Don Blankenship caught up with 29 miners at the Upper Big Branch disaster a couple of years ago in the Coal River Valley of West Virginia. Barack Obama came and delivered a eulogy at the memorial service for the 29 incinerated miners. And it was at that memorial service that Barack Obama, President of the United States, repeated for the West Virginia Coal Association in his eulogy, the West Virginia Coal Association's primary marketing slogan, coal keeps the lights on. Coal keeps the lights on. The following day, of course, the National Mining Association, after Barack Obama had kindly repeated the association slogan during the eulogy of 29 men incinerated, you know, under that whole rubric of coal keeps the lights on. The day after that, the National Mining Association issued a press release stating, Barack Obama has parked his tanks on the lawn of coal. It's already happened, Darlene, just saying. It's just going to get more obvious, I guess. But Darlene continues, she says, I'm all for changing memes. Until Occupy Wall Street, the radical right has had a virtual lock on setting the memes and the course of the discourse, if you will. So going forward, no one on the left, no liberals or progressives, should refer to the freaks on the right as pro-life. They are anything but. I'm all for Sandra's idea of anti-privacy, or, in keeping with tonight's theme, how about calling them pro-fetus, or pro-embryo, or pro-zygote, or pro-ovum and pro-sperm, or before the union, or I'm even okay with pro-glint in the cable repairman's eye. Ooh! Score! Goal! And then there's always pro-blastocyst, but there aren't many right-wingers out there who can spell blastocyst. Darling, pro-glint in the cable repairman's eye. That's precious. Darlene says, but no, don't call them pro-life, because it is those same people who label themselves pro-life and shout it from the rooftops who so easily stop on a dime and point to some obscure verse in the Bible that they insist is God's literal word justifying war somewhere, particularly in some non-Christian country. Suddenly the wholesale destruction of life is acceptable, even desirable. Yep, the destruction of life, the death of mostly women and children in those unfortunate nations. And that means the death of quite a few pregnant women, too, but that's suddenly okay. So maybe people can start throwing out these new memes at an Occupy Wall Street General Assembly meeting somewhere and get the protesters to raise a few new signs next to the We Are the 99% ones and shift the discourse on the ongoing war against women's reproductive rights. God knows we need a course correction ASAP. And, you know, I was thinking about that. I was thinking about that while I was in D.C., and I saw all those shiny-faced, privileged white people, most of them young girls, disgorging from buses to go and march for life. And I was thinking, one of the problems is that you can't have any kind of rational discourse with that bunch because everything that they believe is a function of belief and not knowledge. They believe life begins at conception when it is not scientifically proven to be so. They believe all kinds of crap, you know, crackers turning into Jesus meat when it hits your belly, that kind of the little sip of Boone's Farm turning into Jesus' blood when it goes into their tummy, that kind of stuff. But how, I mean, the politics is the art of compromise, and compromise is an icky business sometimes, almost always. But what kind of compromise would you craft with the people who want to control women's insides? I'm not suggesting that one would ever make this this suggestion. But for instance, if you were to sit down at a negotiating table with the pro-life, pro-fetus movement, see, there goes Darlene telling me not to, and I just screwed it up already. If you were to sit down with the pro-blastocyst movement. And say, okay, we're going to give you everything you want. What do we get in return? Heaven. Got to have something here. We'll just cede your right to control all women's insides, but in return for that, we need you to bring your millions to bear for universal single-payer health care. Could you do that?
No.
Okay, we need you. The next time somebody, some president wants to start a war in some far-off, misbegotten land full of brown people that the defense industry feels like needs a good bombing, we can count on you to bring your millions, since after all, you are pro-life. You'll bring your millions onto the mall in Washington, D.C., and stop the war before it can get started, because we don't want any fetuses inside their mama's tummies bombed, and little children who are done being fetuses and are busy being children, and grown-ups and mommies-to-be and mommies right now and grandmommies. We don't want any of them bombed into oblivion like we did a million of them in Iraq. We can count on you to be on the mall to stop that. No! We're Christians. Andy continues, Cole keeps the lights on, Barack Obama said it, because he's a corporatist. He wants to make us. He wants to make all the corporations happy. All corporations have to be happy with our president. Keep that campaign backsheesh coming in, boys. Yeah. And thanks, Ed, for helping us take care of the evening's fundraising. 26 minutes past the hour and time to go forthwith to the phones. We have a few lines open if you want to light them up and line up as we move through the program tonight. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good afternoon, Bob.
Hey, how are you?
Kevin in Colorado Springs again.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the program. Glad you decided to chime in.
Yeah, it's been a while. I enjoyed last week. I unfortunately missed Thursday. I would have loved to have heard that, but I had an all-day appointment with the VA, and you know how that goes, I'm sure, or have heard how that goes.
I have heard. I've never had the pleasure.
Wait. Well, I got to say they take good care of me, but by the way, you mentioned fetus fries.
Yes.
It should be freedom fetus fries.
Exactly.
Or fetus freedom fries.
And fetus freedom toast.
Yes, exactly. And there, you've got everything in that. You've got your fetuses that have got their freedoms, and you've got the fetuses being eaten, all in one. So they get what they want, and I guess we get what we want. I don't know about compromise there.
That's the whole point. There's no compromising with them because they will not compromise. It is strictly their way or the highway.
Well, just when you were talking there and you said, but no, because we're Christian, you forgot to add, because we believe in freedom. You forgot that part.
Oh, I did. I forgot the freedom part and the liberty part. You always got to add the liberty part just to keep the cranky-ass Ron Paul followers happy.
Yep. They believe in freedom and liberty. They believe in free speech. But if it's your free speech, it doesn't count. But if it's their free speech, don't you dare step on it. And this is what we've come to in our society today. Tonight is driving me crazy because Obama will give a good speech. But all I could think about today, if I were writing a column or blog, I'd started out with the betrayal of Obama. All the promises made 3.5 years ago, not much of them fulfilled, and most of them broken. And the one that aggravates me the most is the one where he said, if there's a union protest somewhere, I'm going to put on my shoes and be right there with you. And we haven't seen him do that yet.
Yeah, that one never quite worked out, did it?
Virginia. You know, it's just sad. It's sad. Because we've got idiots like this guy down in Oklahoma coming up with a bill like this that has no meaning, you know? And maybe it is for a distraction, but my gosh, I'm just losing it over the fact that people can't seem to think anymore, you know? Like whoever did the Idiocracy movie had a few brain cells in their head to be able to come up with some of the stuff they came up with in that movie.
Oh, without a doubt.
Make it funny. But like,
and I keep the fetus thing just won't go away for me, Kevin, because I keep thinking of great movie lines or movie moments like, oh, I don't know, in Forrest Gump, we got fried fetus, bald fetus, fetus etouffee, fetus cake. Remember the shrimp mm-hmm. dialogue? Right.
Yeah, when you were talking about Tracy, I could just imagine her running over the poor taco vendor as she pulled up and heard that statement about the
right. That's the whole thing. I just saw her pulling up and getting ready to put the cab in park, and then just putting it back in drive and going on down the road. Well, thank you, Bob.
And the poor taco guy wondering what the hell
what did
was
I
that
do
about. So, I just wanted to call and say hello more than anything, since I haven't had a chance to in the past week. I'm gonna, if you don't mind, Bob, I'm gonna send you an email. I sent you an email a week or so back about some of the computer issues I was having.
Yeah.
And what you sent me technically works, but it doesn't. So I'm going to send you an email and ask for a couple RSS addresses and try and go that route.
Okay, that's fine.
What I want to do is be able to listen on my MP3 player.
Well, you know what? If you just go to whiterosesociety.org, Kevin, you can set the RSS up right there, or you can do it through iTunes itself.
Okay.
Easy, easy.
Well, with my accessible equipment, it sometimes isn't easy.
Well, that's true, too. That's true, too.
Drives me nuts because it should work, but it doesn't. And it's because of the reading technology in the software doesn't, I won't say it's not compatible, it's very different. And you've got to be able to figure out two technologies, the regular technology and the accessible technology, and somehow marry them together. So, also, because I am having trouble sometimes logging not only onto your website, but other websites, actually logging onto the homepage, I'll ask you for the address, too, and I'll go ahead and donate for tonight's show, too.
If you just use the it's all connected to the PayPal. PayPal is all connected to my email address. It's just bobkincaid@gmail.com.
Okay. Well, I need the snail mail address because...
Okay, and...
Over.
I will send that to you in an email as soon as I receive yours.
Yep, and I appreciate it. I appreciate people like David sending me that DVD. I still haven't got it. I'm waiting on it. And
well, darn.
I'll be here soon. Yeah, I had my mail checked yesterday. I didn't get a chance for someone to check it today, but still wasn't there as of yesterday. So I guess that's why they're cutting the postal service. You know, because there's some...
It was working too well.
Right, yeah. You know, they have more than enough people to get this mail delivered out. Got to cut them down. Make them corporatized. Take away their benefits. So, anyway, I'm not making much sense, but I did want to call...
No, you're doing fine, Kevin. I appreciate the call.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, take care. All right.
Hey, and I'm going to send you another thing for tomorrow night, too.
Okay, good deal.
A link. You'll see it. It'll be great for church night.
All right. Beautiful. Thanks, Kevin.
Prayer meeting night.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye now. Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. In the South, we say behind the cornbread curtain. I don't know what curtain Kevin's behind, but when you're in Colorado Springs, you're behind one. There's no getting around it. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
You know, I'm starting to come on laughing because you know I'm about to be really horrible. But you know what? When you guys were talking about the food, anyway, this Paula Deen. You're kidding me. Listen, she said, somebody was asking her a question. They said, do you think that Southern food has a start and a finish, or do you think it's something that continues to evolve? Dean's response after needing clarification was, what's wrong with just butter and salt and grits? I'm sorry.
Oh, that's just zen, isn't it?
Oh, shit. Listen, this woman is crazy. I can't, you know, I can't believe
it. Look, you know, it was a year ago in March that I found myself down in Tunica, Mississippi for that one meeting I attended, and it was at a casino there, and the hotel was across the road from the casino. So, but, you go over there once to walk through, because you got to.
Right.
And it was Harrah's, and I walk in there, and it's like the twin terrors of my world. Great big, gianter than life-size signs. One is the Paula Deen Southern Hospitality Cafe, where everything is fried, even the salad. And the other was Toby Keith's I Love This Bar and Grill.
No, you know, now you're just making shit up.
I wish the hell I was, Sandra.
No way, because, I mean, I found some, this woman is crazy. Somebody was...
Well, yeah, no wonder. I mean, how could Bourdain resist that little needle job that he put through on her? She announces she's got type 2 diabetes in order to launch her new line of type 2 diabetes cooking stuff.
And yeah, not only that, but she had to, you know, she knew about the disease since 2008, and now she's popping up.
Well, it takes a while to get a good marketing scam going. That's a good dollar, Sandra.
Oh, God. I mean, but she has some choice. I mean, she has some choice. Ben, let me just give you this one other one, and I'll stop. We quit eating. We all out of here. This statement, whatever. But then she said, yeah, that's what she said. If we quit eating, we're all out of here. That's how she justifies her type of food. But I mean, is she really popular? See, I don't know anything about it. I just was reading a couple of articles.
Oh, she's way popular.
And it's just a bunch of just really heart attack food. Is that what it is?
I'm almost not kidding. She just about deep fries salad.
Well, they got some choice. She looked crazy too. They got some funny pictures of her. Anyway,
I mean, you know, back when Smithfield Meats was having all of its horrible labor problems, you know, those nightmares that were going on at that.
She supported them, of course.
Oh,
right?
She took. That's a good dollar. You know, it's. She became the Smithfield spokesperson at the same time that Smithfield was abusing the hell out of its workers there at that plant in North Carolina that kills 32,000 hogs a day.
Well, some reviewers said that her whole recipe in Encyclopedia, which is pretty much a butter-laden bobsled ride to Diabetesville.
and you know, I'm laughing here, but, you know, I'm a Southern guy, and I seem to recall somebody on the other end of the line praising fried chitlins at Christmas time.
Exactly.
But you can't just eat it all the time.
No. You know, I mean, recently we painfully switched over to, you know, some sort of smoked turkey for the collard greens. Because, you know, at some point you got to just say, oh, no, you know, we can't put lard on everything and cook everything in lard.
No, see, I draw a line in the sand at the ham hock for my beans.
Well, I understand, but you know, it's just that, you know, you got to try. But no, that's why I say the chitlins is sort of once a year,
once every right?
2 years, really.
Yeah.
But I'm still amazed that this person is sort of. Yeah, I mean, because it's pretty hardcore if all her food is like that.
Oh, it is. I mean, it's,
you know.
Grits étouffée, you know.
I can't eat that all year round. I mean,
My problem is that I can. I love that stuff.
Well, no. I would love to, too. But, you know, I just sort of had to change. I mean, yesterday, you know, was my birthday, if I may say so.
Oh, happy one. There we go, us January people.
Yeah, just as old as dirt. But anyway, the girls, you know, I had a steak. You know, I don't ever eat steak, but oh my God, was that good.
The same thing happens when I get together with Guy James in D.C. We embarrass ourselves on a 3-day beef binge because, bless his heart, Guy won't eat chicken, Guy won't eat fish, Guy won't eat lamb, Guy won't eat goat. guy eats beef and pork. And so, you know, far be it from me. I don't want to be off-putting. So, you know, it's like the dinner that one of our dear friends in the audience in the Horn family put up. We went over to the Westin City Center on Thomas Circle in D.C., and I had the best New York strip I've ever had in my life, done up in this beautiful little bistro sauce that was, you know. But I know exactly what you're talking about, because you don't. Well, for one, who among us can do that every day?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, the whole idea of meat with every meal, and I mean, it's just ridiculous. Why? But that's not to say that I don't enjoy it when I have it. But this Dean person, wow.
Well, Marty just made a good comparison. Marty says, happy birthday, Sandra. And by the way, might we say Paula Dean is a sort of anti-Morgan Spurlock?
Okay, oh, yeah.
And Jeanette says that Paula Dean has the most annoying accent ever. She definitely brings out my nasty prejudice against Southerners. I saw her on Craig Ferguson once. At first he was picking on her accent, like I expected, but after he tasted her food, he treated her like she was a queen. But you know, that's not necessarily Southern cooking. The central tenet, Sandra, of French cooking is that fat is flavor. And it's true. It's absolutely true. A little bit of fat goes a long way, and a lot of fat goes even further. But it's also toxic.
Well, yeah. Well, at any rate, I mean, you know, for her to be sort of, yeah, marketing that drug, I don't. To me, it's just the wedding of two horrible type of situations: the drug industry and really bad food for you.
But what was fascinating was this. Speaking of things that are bad for you, a study out from Princeton, obviously not funded by the industry, Sandra. The study out from Princeton that they've done more work on high fructose corn syrup.
Oh, yeah.
And they have proven that the industry talking point, well, it's just like sugar.
Well, yeah.
Is not true. And that, in fact, you do get fatter on high fructose corn syrup than you do on sugar.
Yeah.
And it's not just a matter of quantity.
No. I mean, it's there has to be an explanation for just the, you know, the huge amount of obesity besides personal responsibility, and the fructose makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
Because you can't get away from it if you're just trying to have a basic diet. It's in everything.
But you know what? Because I'm a little obsessive compulsive, I have found places to get away from it. For instance, you gotta have a beverage here behind the microphone for 3 hours. Tonight's is Welch's Family Farmer Owned, 100% juice, blah, 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 no sugar added. And it tells you on the back of the label that the only sugars that are in it are fruit sugars, not high fructose corn syrup. And Ocean Spray has done the same thing. And you can get Hunt's and Heinz versions of ketchup that don't have high fructose corn syrup in it. Coca-Cola is still miles behind. But Pepsi offers Pepsi Throwback, Mountain Dew Throwback, and a cup and Sierra Mist. None of those have high fructose corn syrup in them, and because there's a recognition that people don't want that shit.
Yeah, no. I mean, we try to keep. I mean, for example, you know, the girls. I mean, you can't really keep the stuff away from children because the environment they run in, it's so much around them, but at least here at home, you know, that's just, they can drink the mineral water that I drink, that's it, you know what I mean, or milk. I mean, they're not being fed endless amounts of soda pop.
And we won't have the milk conversation right now, but that's a whole nother. By the way, you touched a nerve. Fritz just wrote in from, of course, Arkansas. He said, Sandra, what Bob said is for real. Paula Deen is almost considered royalty among some in the South. She just had too much gray hair and a bit too plump to be considered a cougar. So.
Oh, man. Well, listen, like I said, you learn something new every day, and that was what I learned today was about that woman. I'd never even heard of her. I'm out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know.
So now you understand why Bourdain tweeted that he, you know, I think I'll break my own leg and then go so I can go into the cane business or whatever it was.
I read an article about it. I thought, oh yeah, this is well off. But then I started looking around a bit more, and I didn't realize that it was such a cottage industry that she has going for herself.
Oh, she's selling cookware. She's selling ham. She's selling. With the diabetes business, I don't know. Maybe she'll get her own brand of insulin.
Yeah, well, speaking of all that, and McDonald's is like sort of making money hand over fist in this era of austerity. They had a 12% increase in England. You know, families are eating that crap because they can't afford pizza. So they shifted down from pizza to McDonald's.
Yeah, and fish and chips is just right out.
Anyway, and in America, I think it increased 7% in the last quarter.
Idiocracy is coming true. Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
But McDonald's, I'm a bit confused because anytime, you know, I see McDonald's, it really isn't all that cheap. I guess if you buy the dollar menu, because I'm kind of lost because, to be honest, it really isn't that cheap.
No, it's not. And the thing about the dollar menu is it is largely what the foodie types refer to as empty calories.
Yeah, well, but at any rate, it's just kind of a bit distressing that people have to turn to that because food is so expensive that that's where they have to go. It's just, I don't know, it just seems ass backwards, you know?
Right, yeah, and because, no, you can't go to if you sit down, because I've done it, I hate to admit it, but I've done it. If you go through McDonald's and you order off the regular menu for a family of five, you're out the door at $40+.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I mean. I know that it costs a fair amount, you know, when, you know, you can sort of prepare a fairly decent meal.
That $40 would buy onions. A couple of pot roasts,
right?
Carrots, celery, potatoes, bang into the slow cooker, and at 7 in the morning and at 5 o'clock in the evening, you've got a meal that you didn't work much to put together. That's, you know, reasonably healthy.
And dessert.
And bingo.
Yeah. No. Anyway, I just am sort of I mean, I suppose people we'll eat that because it's made quickly and it's cheap. But at any rate,
the other thing is that it speaks to the digestive tract because it's designed specifically to make all those places in the gut happy.
Yeah, what, salt, sugar, and fat, right?
Yeah, and don't forget the high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, I mean, it's fairly even depressing talking about it. But what I wanted to call about was, I really couldn't believe that Santorum. I was like, oh, my God, is there any? There's no
what way. A beautiful way that was to begin my day. The email from you and from Michael almost simultaneously.
But I'm just thinking.
I mean, I did a spit take with my cream of wheat.
Yeah, no. That was unbelievable. And it's unbelievable that there is no one remotely savvy enough in his organization to think, maybe we shouldn't do this, or, you see what I'm saying? I don't know. Maybe they're just that far removed, because that is ridiculous.
Well, they can't pull it now, because that would mean that they would have to admit that they know what that word means, and they're Christians, so therefore they can't know what that word means.
Well, I haven't really went back to the website to see if there was any.
I checked. It's still there. A big C, a big U, and a big M with the frothy mixture smiling face right next to it.
Oh, no. And, you know, I don't even know. I'm with Andy on the whole State of the Union thing. I'm not even going to bother, but I do have a slogan for it. We will win the future because together we can win. So that's my contribution.
Winning.
State of the Union. I mean, because, you know, what is he going to talk about? How he's going to give away the farm to appease the bank and pretend that he's helping homeowners?
Well, isn't that sort of in the isn't that in the works?
Well, yeah, but there's apparently a setback. You know, they haven't come to some agreement. You know, because it is just so egregious what they want to do. I mean, not only is it a small pittance that the banks would have to pay, but worse still, they want to use investor funds to pay it. So the banks aren't even going to have to really cough up anything. I mean, it's disturbing. It's just not a winning solution for Obama for his election year. I'm not too sure. I don't know who. I don't know what's going on. You know, I mean, are we so much of a plutonomy that they just have to do what they're told now, and the hell with optics? Because it don't look right.
Although I'm just looking at the CNN website here, and their graphic is damned interesting for somebody, you know, for the for-profit media. They've got a thing at the top center of their website that says "Rich, Gingrich, and Crazy Rich," and it's three pie charts. That and a little tiny pie chart that says Obama 1.8 million total income. And the one in the middle says Gingrich 3.2 million total income. And then and it's like those comparisons you see between the size of Earth, the size of Saturn, and the size of Jupiter, where you could put like 216 Earths inside Jupiter, that kind of thing.
Or the graph just going off the charts way past everybody else. Yeah,
right. And so the big, this humongous pie chart says Romney 21.7 million total income, and of course all of those are in 1 year.
No, I mean, all of it is just over the top anyway. But there's 26% effective tax rate for the Obamas, 31% for Gingrich, and 13.9% for this equity fund parasite. This motherfucker thinks he can run for president. His optics are off the chart. A, why would we want to have a president who has tax havens? I mean, how bad does that look, Bob? Seriously.
Well, and the thing is, that's not a rhetorical question. I can't answer those questions about the American people anymore, Sandra, because I know it looks awful to me, and it looks awful to you, and it looks awful to the Horn family. But, you know, there is that segment of the Republican electorate out there who says, that's going to be me someday, and I'm going to pull myself up by my bootstraps and do it.
Well, no, actually, there's this. CBS did a recent poll, and yesterday, and the poll said that, you know, people are really don't understand why these effective tax rates are so low. Like I thought, people don't know. And he's a poster child for it. There's a face for some asshole who's paying half of what most Americans pay in taxes and capital gains my ass. People look at that and say, oh, well, that's not right. Intuitively. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
who
because
cares?
At the end of the day, how is it that a person who works for a living pays more in taxes than a person who clips coupons for a living?
Right. And you know, that poll is like, you know, something like, you know, majority, I don't know if it was 58 or something like that, are like, no, the tax rate should be equalized. So, you know, Romney may be doing a service, you know, by bringing, you know, because his reluctance, and I didn't realize that as a governor, he never released his taxes. Did you know that?
Yeah, and there's one more little creepy note. He gave more money to the Mormon Church than he paid in taxes, because to be a really good mucky-muck Mormon, just like to be a really good Scientologist, you have to give lots and lots of money. And he tithes 10% of his income to the Mormon Church, but he only gives Uncle Sam, you know, a pittance.
Well, when is his position in the hierarchy going to become a campaign issue?
I don't know.
I'm waiting. Don't they have a setup much like the Vatican?
Yeah, they do.
Well, you know, that rich asshole, I'm sure he has, you know, connections to the church big time. So how is that going to impact his governing? And I don't mean to sound like a fundy, but I got to ask.
Well, you can't help but ask.
I'm like, you're a freak with your magic underwear giving millions upon millions to the church and trying to explain why you pay, let's not say 14 or 15, it's 13.9%.
Bang.
That's what, you know, and I mean, I'm sorry to be stuck on that, but I'm like, wow. I'm trying to figure out the advantage of that to anybody but him.
And you know, beyond the Cayman Islands accounts, dude has Swiss bank accounts.
Well, yeah.
That has always been a sort of marker of shadiness. You know,
well, shady,
deposit the money in gold in a numbered Swiss bank account and you'll be contacted.
You're paying them to keep it secret.
Yeah.
And it's just like, why does he need that? You know, last time I thought he was just a governor of a state in the U.S., not the president of Gabon, you know.
Well, that was perfect.
I'm just sort of like...
No, that is. You've got a Swiss bank account if you're a little third world banana republic dictator.
You know, and it's just kind of like, you know, what's going on here? And to me, you know, I just don't understand. I don't know what he's doing. And is he so, you know, powerful that he's just going to get his turn to run? Because it isn't, I don't really think it's playing all that well for the sort of mainstream Republican crowd.
No, but I made that mistake again this morning, Sandra. I was, the last few mornings, we've been getting up and taking the kids to school because it's the choice between a literally an hour-long bus ride to go 6 miles to school and, you know, a 10-minute car ride. So I've been getting up and taking the kids to school, and we have to be out of here at, like, you know, 6:45 in the morning, which is tough on a guy who's 5 o'clock in the afternoon is 9 p.m.
But, well, did you get a replacement vehicle, or is this a second vehicle?
No, this is the other vehicle.
Oh, okay. It's
been brought out of reserves.
It was
brought off injured reserve. But so I get back home and I've got my decaf and I sit down and dumbass me turns on the TV and, you know, there's that guy who quite possibly may have murdered his beautiful young legislative assistant, you know, Joe Scarborough. And he's looking earnestly into the camera and saying, I'm sorry, y'all, but you got to get used to it. Newt is not going to be the nominee. I mean, you get the idea. He's got a real axe to grind against Newt, and I guess a lot of former Republican Congress people do, because it was Newt rubbing off on him that caused him to be former Congress people.
Oh, yeah. No, I know Newt. I mean, he ran that house in the ground and lost it for the Republicans, and, you know, he's he's not very popular in the party, but the thing is, there's a problem with Romney if this fool is surging like he is. And the problem with Romney is that it's Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
I mean, he's completely, unbearable. I mean, the more you see of him, the more people recoil. He was yelling at somebody recently. He's very thin-skinned now, have you noticed? Which is fair enough. I mean, you know, I don't think he's going to be able to hold up.
Well, I mean, look at... See, I think the timing just doesn't work out for Willard. Because you got Florida on the 31st of January, which will be my birthday.
But is he still leading, or I don't...
Not so sure.
Right.
And then February 4th, Saturday, is the Nevada caucus, and they're insane. And then, as proven by their lunatic governor choice, Maine is nuts, and that goes on. That's a caucus from the 4th to the 11th of February. Then the 7th is Colorado, Minnesota, and Missouri. And frankly, I wouldn't count more than one out of three for Romney there. Then it's batshit crazy again on February 28th in Arizona and Michigan. He'll get Michigan. Okay, because of his dad.
Yes.
Washington's Republican caucus is on March the 3rd. And then this happens on March the 6th. Alaska, Georgia, Idaho, Massachusetts, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Vermont, Virginia. Now, he doesn't take more than half of those in my book if Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich can remain financially afloat until March the 6th.
Well, but since you, well, if you seem to have these, you know, people who are billionaires just dropping tip change, which is what it is to them.
Yeah, well, this Adelson is a, this Adelson out of Vegas is a casino magnate, I think.
Yeah, but he's the eighth richest pig in America, apparently.
Yeah.
And his wife was the one that dropped the latest $5 million on Newt. So, you know, I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that it's our poor asses caught in the middle of this plutonomy, it would be popcorn time.
Yeah, I don't see anywhere. There's nowhere in that list that I just rattled off, Sandra. There's no knockout punch in there for Willard.
Yeah, well, no, but he should. The knockout punch, unfortunately, in the usual Republican politics is South Carolina, and he blew that. In fact, I didn't realize that Newt Gingrich won by, oh my God, it was like 40.
Yeah, going away.
He pounced his ass, and that was
right after having Iowa taken away from Romney, too.
Well, my favorite is the fact that Mitt Romney is down there in foreclosure central, because you know what he said about foreclosures. Oh, who cares? Let them foreclose so the market can, you know, purge. You know, we're back to the melon syndrome, you know, where you liquidate, liquidate, liquidate.
Right.
But now he's down there talking about strategic defaults. It's like, oh, wait. Oh, now it's okay for people to walk away? Do you know what you're talking about? So he's...
And as John noted in his email, for him to be standing outside a foreclosed house somewhere in Florida today in order to criticize Gingrich, and I'm not defending Gingrich, but for him to deliver this line, the banks aren't bad people, they're just overwhelmed right now.
But wait, is he again equating these corporations to people, or are you saying the banks?
Yes.
The banks aren't bad people. Listen, I'm telling you, it's cyborg time with that dude. Wow, he's well weird.
They're just overwhelmed right now. You know, because somebody who is choosing between eating and keeping the lights on, they're not really overwhelmed right now.
They're overwhelmed much like he is, I think.
Yeah, with money.
No, so I'm not saying that they're doing a line dance in the White House, but shit, it's queuing up, man.
Yeah, well, oh God, you just queued up the boot scootin' boogie in my brain, and I will never forgive you for that.
Because, you know, I know David was sort of implying that, oh no, if they get all this stuff out now, you know, it might not be a problem because the election season is so long.
And lo and behold, look who the Republicans have given the response to. Did you notice that, Sandra?
I told you, I haven't been paying attention. Who?
Mitch Daniels.
Oh, the one that created the Bush economy? Thanks. That looks right.
Optics again. Yeah. By the way, I've got an excerpt here from the State of the Union. You might want to sit down and strap in. There may be screaming and swearing involved.
Okay.
Think about the America within our reach, a country that leads the world in educating its people, an America that attracts a new generation of high-tech manufacturing and high-paying jobs, a future where we're in control of our own energy, and our security and prosperity aren't so tied to unstable parts of the world. An economy built to last, where hard work pays off and responsibility is rewarded. I don't know about you, Sandra, but I read that report about on Apple in the New York Times, and we talked about it at length last night. And them jobs ain't coming over here, those high-tech manufacturing jobs.
Oh, no. And, oh, no. And I'm still stuck on the, you know, anytime you talk about responsibility, you have to bring a laugh track as far as this country's concerned, don't you?
Yes.
I mean, where's the laugh track? I was waiting for you to pull that one up when you were reading that.
Well, this idea of an economy built to last, when has there ever been a capitalist economy built to last, Sandra?
Well, no, and it's just a gibber. That's just some gobbledygook. I don't, you know.
Word salad.
That doesn't make no sense what he's talking about, because it's just not, the reality is just not reflecting that line anymore. He needs to come up with something new.
Well, there's a bunch of this stuff in there. This is a dandy. The defining issue of our time is how to keep that promise alive. No challenge is more urgent. No debate is more important. We can either settle for a country where a shrinking number of people do really well while a growing number of Americans barely get by, or we can restore an economy where everyone gets a fair shot, everyone does their fair share, and everyone plays by the same set of rules. What's at stake are not democratic values or Republican values, but American values. We have to reclaim them. Like I said, it's going to be a great speech. It's going to be a popcorn moment.
Oh, no. I mean, that is just, you know, I don't know. That's just demoralizing. Oh, give me a break. I mean, except for the sort of huge layer of the 1% or the 0.1% that don't operate with any rules.
Well, that's something that just got pointed out in an email a couple of minutes ago. Jeanette wrote in and said, and they all, candidates with their incomes and their entitlement, and they all pay FICA tax for Social Security on only 1% or less of their earned income, and none of their unearned income. The FICA cap is the entitlement in Social Security, entitlement of multimillionaires and billionaires not to participate. And that's stunning as well. You know, take that however many millions it is that Willard Romney has given to the Mormon Church, compare that to the pittance that he pays in taxes, and then note that he is only paying FICA, if at all, on the first 100,000 of taxes that he pays. So if he paid taxes on $24 million last year, the only part that was FICA taxed was the first 100,000, and the other $23,900,000 was untaxed for Social Security purposes. And that's just bull.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. And it's incredible that, you know, because of who runs this country, you don't even get to have a discussion about raising, you know, the cap.
No, because Barack Obama spent tremendous political capital not funding Social Security. You know,
exactly.
the so-called payroll tax cut.
And we're about to go back to that argument again, as if that is the only thing in his arsenal that he can possibly bring to the floor. You know, and that's disturbing.
And if you notice the Green News report, lo and behold, the Repiglicans are getting ready to tie any sort of deal on government funding to a capitulation on that toxic-ass pipeline.
Oh, I know, but are we going to get a Carl Levin slip-up? You know how he said, well, the administration wanted it. You know, it's like, oh, we're going to get one of those? I mean, I don't trust that administration, only insofar as how far people can push them to do the right thing, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think that Bill McKibben's and crew, they got to come up with a new round of arrests. You know, that's what all the gay people did. They just kept pushing Obama. Seems like that's the only way it's going to work.
And I think Bill McKibben over at 350.org understands that methodology. And that was why there were 12 or 14,000 people holding hands around the White House that day.
Well, I think it's interesting that Darrell Isaac is pushing hard for the National Park Service to revoke or somehow end that permit that the protesters have right now. Because, you know, they had gotten like a 4 or 6 month permit to camp in that park in Washington, and they basically set up a Zuccotti Park, you know, x7 as far as infrastructure goes. And, you know, now all of a sudden the Congress is kind of concerned about them being able to stay there. So, I mean, just kind of keep your eye out on them trying to get rid of that encampment, because I think that encampment is going to be a bounce-off point for some huge election coming up in the spring. I don't know. It's just
I think you're right. I think you're right. Oh, by the way, Corey just wrote in from the Free State of Louisville. He said, I won't begrudge, and because this goes back to the food discussion at the beginning. He said, Big Agra and Paula Deen thinking is killing us all. You're gonna scream a little bit when we get to one of the later lines in this email, Sandra. Corey says, hey, I won't begrudge anyone who eats at McDonald's because they regularly don't have the time to sit around and make their own food. I fault Big Agra for maintaining the subsidies, and there's a lot of good reasoning in this, for maintaining the subsidies that cause all the ingredients used in the food McDonald's sells to be so dirt cheap and upsold to make profits. A Big Mac is cheaper than a piece of fruit. Something I've told friends and coworkers in the past, anyone who eats McDonald's every day for their daily sustenance has a problem bigger than eating McDonald's every day. Hell, says Corey, I work there, and I don't eat that stuff every day if I can help it. I wish this wasn't the case, but I live in the United States where people are looking for a way to F the other guy over a little harder than they're getting F'd over themselves. Speaking of which, and this is the we've got a horseshoe casino across the river. Guess who has her own buffet there? Since the casino sponsors U of L, University of Louisville Sports, I get to hear that commercial on the radio over and over again, you know, for the Paula Deen Country Buffet. One of the lines is, swear to dog, Corey says. Actually, the salad bar is just there so you've more room for more hoe cakes. It'll be a little secret of ours. And he says, where do Indiana and Kentucky rank in terms of health? Three guesses.
Oh, boy, that's too much.
It is. And
wow.
It'll be a little secret of ours.
No, I mean, I especially like the observation about got to have somebody to step on. I mean, ain't that the damn truth?
Yeah. It's the entirety of our current economic philosophy, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's very social Darwinistic. That's too true.
David in Maine has sent an early toaster or mid-show toaster entry. Paula Deen is the Nancy Grace of culinary creations of cholesterol terrorism. And Isaac just noted that now that she has diabetes since 2008, as you noted, Paula Deen is telling viewers to use canola oil in her recipes.
Oh, wow. Well, that should really sort of save everybody's asses, I guess. What the hell? Oh, listen, I have to ask you. I mean, I know it's not very, you know, the dead and all, but that fool dropped dead right away.
Oh, yes, he did.
Yopa. I'm just like, oh, my God. When I heard that news, I thought, wow, not very nice.
And you know what? There's multiple levels of ways you can look at that, Sandra, because now here's a guy who was Ivy League educated at Brown. Granted, he played football under Rip Engel for Brown. He played quarterback when Rip Engel went to be head coach at Penn State. Joe Paterno followed him to be his quarterback's coach. Up until that time, Paterno had planned on taking his degree in English with a minor emphasis in classical studies, okay? Classical studies, this is important, and going to law school. So when he was asked about Sandusky's boy rapes, one of the things that Paterno said was that one of the reasons he didn't act as hastily as he should have or with the more determination is, I had never heard of man rape. Now, this is a guy who went to Brown University and read Homer.
Right. Now, I'm about to say, hello?
Who probably somewhere along the way read Plato's Symposium in which, famous Athenian general basically makes passes at Socrates all night. And he'd never heard of man rape. But beyond that, the thing that struck me is that there is an element, you know, I've talked on this program about why I don't commonly use the word tragedy. Because the meaning of tragedy is a horrible, horrible thing that happens to somebody because they were blind to the thing that made the horrible thing possible.
Right.
And it may actually be applicable to Joe Paterno. Because he was blind. What's the line out of The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance? When reality becomes the legend, when the legend becomes reality, print the legend.
Mm.
Well, that was Joe Paterno.
Well, I think that Dave Zirin makes a good observation that, you know, that the board, those people all should be fired and removed too.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's sort of, you know, well beyond Joe Paterno, and, you know, I just thought, yeah, it's true. I mean, everything is preserving the institution when the institution is just kind of completely, you know, decayed. You know?
Absolutely hollowed out with corruption and decay.
Right.
You're right.
And so anyway, I don't know, I just was sort of, I knew he was ill, but I was kind of taken aback, and I thought, wow, so, you know, that all was such a nasty end for such a long time of...
And largely illustrious career. But by the same token, you got to go back and reassess some things, and this isn't really sports, but it's sports. You know, it was 1987 when Penn State went down to the Orange Bowl to play the University of Miami for the national championship. Jimmy Johnson was the coach of the Miami Hurricanes, and, you know, that was the era where Miami was showing up wearing combat fatigues. You remember that shit? And you know, it was all about that attitude, and they talked about the swagger of the U, and they'd celebrate and revel in hurting people and things like that, and it was juxtaposed against a Paterno-coached team from Penn State, you know, with those plain blue and white uniforms, the black high-top shoes, the kids who weren't getting arrested, the work ethic, blah 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 blah. I mean, it was set up as a classic good versus evil battle. Well, but with Joe Pa's passing, and more particularly with what we know about the Sandusky scandal, you've kind of got to go back and reassess that, because the author of that, you know, Penn State won that game, Sandra, and the author of that Miami defeat was none other than Joe Pa's defensive coordinator, Jerry Sandusky, who at the same time that Penn State was being lauded for what good people they were versus, you know, those Miami Hurricanes and their swagger, well, Jerry Sandusky was probably buggering little boys.
Yeah, no. If he was a part of that whole... Yeah, I mean... No, so the tarnish is definitely off. And, you know, I don't know how they're going to resuscitate his career. I'm sure they'll give it 5 or 10 years.
Well, the alumni are certainly not happy about the new hire.
Who's the new hire?
They hired a coordinator from the New England Patriots.
Oh, right. Okay.
And there's been a lot of uproar about that. But supposedly, you know, they're bringing in a professional if you can deal in that market or the New York market, you can deal with anything, even little boy rape. I know. I know.
Well, anyway, listen, I'll leave it at that.
Well, thanks for bringing Paula Deen to the table. That was just darn good fun.
Listen, I'm going to have to check out some clips or something. I got to see it in action.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I'd do a couple of shots of olive oil just to keep the good cholesterol up, because there's going to be lots of bacon.
Oh, shoot. Grits. I can't believe she sullied grits like that. But anyway.
I know. I know.
Okay, take care.
All right, see you, Sandra. Bye now.
Bye.
Grits. Line's open if you want to jump in for the remainder of this this Tuesday program, 20 minutes past the hour. Sorry, Marty. I read those excerpts from the president's speech, and Marty wrote in and said, couldn't you have waited till I got home and got a couple of shots of rum or two in me before you read that? I gotta have a heads up on that kind of stuff, Marty. I'm not a mind reader here. Jeanette not at all happy with the prospects of the president's speech, and that, let's see, what's the line there? Think about the America within our reach, a country that leads the world in educating its people. Yeah, we got some work to do to get there. But working with that, Jeanette writes in and says, think about an America where you can be indefinitely detained without charge, and if the Enemy Expatriation Act passes, and I sign it, you can also be stripped of your citizenship. Think about an America where Monsanto, Goldman Sachs, and the oil industry don't have key positions in my administration. Think about an America where governors can appoint a corporation to run your town and schools. Think about an America at war with Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia, Libya, Iraq, and possibly Iran. You reckon there's going to be any Iran saber rattling in this thing tonight? Just saying. Think of an America in a nuclear weapons renaissance, see Democracy Now, contrary to my public statements about non-proliferation. Think about an America where the police and military, no more posse comitatus, are used against non-violent protesters. Think about an America which tortures people via extraordinary rendition. Think about an America with fracking, offshore and Arctic drilling, coal and nuclear power. Think about an America where foreign journalists employed by non-profits and whistleblowers are criminals. Think about an America with no more social safety net. Think about an America with the biggest gap between rich and poor in history. Think about an America run by a dictator and legislature courts of pimps. That's a tough little slice. You know, I keep thinking about Richard O'Dwyer. I can't imagine what it would be to be in his shoes. You're a college student in England, and you put up a little website with a bunch of links on it. There's nothing. You don't have any copyright-protected material on your website whatsoever. And it gets popular because it's a way for people to go and find other places to go. And suddenly somebody tells you that the United States of America wants to drag you over to the United States to face the rough justice of the federal prosecutorial complex. And what you did in your home country isn't even illegal. And your home country says, sure, take him. Why don't you waterboard him a little bit? Maybe render him into a little box in Syria somewhere. For a guy who built a website, not a guy who flew anything into a building. Not a guy who caused an economy to crash. Not a guy who got, as Phil Ibid from the chat room noted in his email last night, not a guy who got 29 miners incinerated beyond recognition. Not a guy whose avarice got 11, 14 people blown into pieces and sprayed all over the Gulf of Mexico on the BP Horizon rig. No, no, no. A guy who made a website. Just a college kid. Not out there with an avowed philosophy that nothing needs to be secret anymore. No, 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 no. Not a member of the United States military operating under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Just a college kid. And his world is upside down because suddenly, although they can't find their way to prosecute the murderers from the Upper Big Branch disaster or the BP Horizon disaster, or put a Wall Street bankster in jail, the Obama Administration Department of Justice figures that it's going to get its jollies curb stomping a college kid from England because that's what Hollywood wants. That's what Chris Dodd wants. That is, in fact, Kafkaesque, Camus-esque. That is the essence of absurdism. That's waking up one morning and being carried away and not ever knowing what the hell it is you did or didn't do. And that is frightening. Frightening hell. That's terrifying. And then, yes, Iran. Haven't seen any excerpts from the speech about Iran. And, of course, we don't know what some right-wing jackass will scream from the seats tonight. You lie! We just don't know. So we'll take a little break and come back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Thank you for your kind support. This is the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Got a big thumbs up on that song from Jeanette. Peter Gabriel, of course, and Games Without Frontiers. This is the Horn, half past the last hour of the program this evening. And before going back to the phones, just a couple of stories for you, because they need to go out there tonight. I asked, you know, will there be any mention of Iran? And, of course, if there is, it will be because of the toxic relationships that we have in that blasted portion of the globe. Interesting story coming out of Atlanta. Weird story coming out of Atlanta. There's a weekly newspaper in Atlanta called the Atlanta Jewish Times. You know, Atlanta has a very, very old Jewish community. An old and proud Jewish community. The Atlanta Jewish Times has been published for quite a while. It was founded in 1925. Claims a circulation of about 3,500 people. It has a staff of five, one of whom is Andrew Adler. He's the owner and the publisher of the newspaper. And he wrote something and published it in his paper recently, namely January the 13th. Maybe you already know about this story. I was frankly shocked. Because I couldn't imagine, well, first of all, a liberal paper wouldn't publish something like this. And if they had, it would have been, it would have occasioned a massive outcry and demands for not just a visit from the Secret Service, but arrest and prosecution. Texas Betsy telling me the Atlanta Jewish Times editor was fired this morning. What I find interesting, however, is that Andrew Adler is the owner and publisher of the Atlanta Jewish Times, and he's the guy who wrote this. It was a column about the U.S. and Israel having diverging views on Iran. And he presents, Adler presented three options: strike Hezbollah and Hamas, strike Iran, or this, the third option, laid out by a newspaper publisher in the United States of America. Three, give the go-ahead. This is Israel's options, okay? Three, give the go-ahead for U.S.-based Mossad agents to take out a president deemed unfriendly to Israel in order for the current vice president to take his place and forcefully dictate that the United States policy includes it's helping the Jewish state obliterate its enemies. Yes, you read three correctly, Adler wrote. Order a hit on a president in order to preserve Israel's existence. Think about it. If I've thought of this Tom Clancy-type scenario, don't you think that this almost unfathomable idea has been discussed in Israel's most inner circles? Another way of putting three in perspective goes something like this. How far would you go to save a nation comprised of 7 million lives, Jews, Christians, and Arabs alike? You have got to believe, like I do, that all options are on the table. First of all, it gives me the cold chills to think of, because, you know, Israel's a friendly nation, right? We've got a friendly relationship with them. And yet this guy would intimate that there are death squads operating within the United States. Again, I offer this to you as a means of comparison of how varied can... we're liberals, we're progressives, we don't think this way. We don't think that assassination is a tool. It is contrary to the law of the United States of America that we would assassinate foreign leaders. But this is what happens when, like George W. Bush, you start unilateral wars against other countries. Other countries feel like they have the right to take unilateral action against you. Now, again, Adler. Is simply a newspaper editor. So what Adler did is he stepped down. After ringing the bell, which cannot be unrung, after opening the barn door and letting all the horses out, he has now closed the barn door, announcing that he is relinquishing all day-to-day activities effective immediately. And is apparently looking for a buyer for the Atlanta Jewish Times, or Jewish Times of Atlanta. He told Gawker where this story came from. He told Gawker he only wrote the story to, quote, see what kind of reaction I was going to get from readers. Well, that's like saying that you only pinched the baby to see what the baby would do. Michael Horowitz is president and CEO of the Atlanta Jewish Federation. He said the column made Adler the worldwide center of negative attention. He said, quote, I was appalled. I was flabbergasted. The Atlanta Jewish Federation asked for Adler's resignation and said in a statement, while we acknowledge his public apology and remorse, the damage done to the people of Israel, the global Jewish people, and especially the Jewish community of Atlanta, is irreparable. Disturbingly, Chaimi Shalev, writing in Haaretz, says there are likely many others who agree with the reasoning behind Adler's extreme words. Texas Betsy telling me that the whole thing has been huge on the Jewish blogs for several days now. Whew. Now, compare and contrast. Let's say that CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, in their published presence, suggested that there were only three ways for Iran to deal with its problems. That one, they could bomb Israel. Two, they could bomb Pakistan. Or three, that they could order Iranian agents inside the United States to take out President Obama. The headquarters of CARE would, as I speak, be a charred ruin. And right-wingers would be up in arms demanding the immediate attack. Immediate total war with Iran. Wouldn't they? You know they would. Patty writing in says, remember this? No, not here. Look below and think about just why it all freaks me out so damn bad. Nah, it could never happen here. Ask Smedley Butler and FDR, right? Patty writes, okay, so I tweet out Max Blumenthal's really disturbing article, how Israeli occupation forces trained Bahraini monarchy guards. Max Blumenthal being a darn fine writer. Now, Israeli occupation forces, Bahraini monarchy guards, trained U.S. police for coordinated crackdown on Occupy protests. That's from December the 2nd of 2011. Truly a disturbing article. She says, so I tweet out Max Blumenthal's really disturbing article, and within a day, see below. So I am now an anti-Semite and need to be watched? Do I find this shit Orwellian, or as I am paranoid? If you do not have time to actually absorb the article Max wrote, wait till you do. It's putrid and wholly sickening. We no longer have any part of our Constitution. Okay, maybe I'm losing it here. Because IDF Rabbi began following Patty. Because of what she published, what she tweeted. But just compare it. Just compare it with what would happen if this was something that was said from the Islamic side. And I think you get a pretty frightening picture. Texas Betsy writing, would you be surprised if I told you I have heard this option at a Shabbat dinner? Betsy, if in fact you have heard it at a Shabbat dinner, I would not be surprised. In the least. It's kind of like how I was surprised but not surprised. You remember the story we had a couple of weeks ago about the kids in the grade school class in Georgia being given math problems about how many beatings Frederick got? Well, up at the pitiful thing that passes for a school that my kids attend, in history class, they were assigned to draw runaway slave posters. I'm informed that the nice white children who attend that school, and there might be two people of color in the whole building, maybe three, began to gleefully draw these wanted posters featuring persons of color with nooses around their neck, persons of color being chased by men with whips. One individual, however, was singled out for being a racist because he drew his slave poster with a fro. That was the racist part. Not the nooses, not the assignment, and not the whips. And that's what I mean by no, I wouldn't be surprised. Texas Betsy noting, the repig-lickin' right-wingers in Texas synagogues are just as bad as any right-wing repig-lickins you have in West Virginia. Hear, hear! I don't doubt that one iota. About 15 minutes before the hour, let's check in with the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. It's Bill in Cleveland here.
Hey, Bill, how you doing?
I'm okay. I right away thought of Admiral Yamamoto when he was speaking about how he was going to assassinate. The guy that launched the brains behind the Pearl Harbor attack. They caught him somewhere over. I can't remember which island it was, and shot him down.
Yeah, was it Bougainvillea or something like that?
Yes, I think you're right. And then you and Sandra got my sixth sense of humor going. You mentioned Romney's position in the Mormon Church. All the jokes came flooding back from the 1960 election. Ike broke his leg leaving the White House on Kennedy's inauguration day. He tripped over the Pope's suitcase. That was one that was going around.
Ho, 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 what a knee slapper.
Exactly, it's like historically, I don't think things change much. It's just the names, you know, the names change. And like the joke you heard about the dental things, it's not a joke, man. It's not funny at all, because now we know what the story is. Years ago, nobody knew what the story was behind all the pollution and what it does. I mean, you know, science keeps bringing the truths out and scares you half to death the more you hear, you know. It's, you know.
Yeah.
It's just tragic. It's, I don't know, did you catch any of that made-for-TV movie, The Kingdom of Heaven?
No, I didn't.
Well, they show it, peruse it a little bit. They tell a pretty honest story of a lot of the people in the French Kingdom of Jerusalem.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, yes, I've seen that film.
Yeah, okay, there's a lot of truth in it. And, I remember picking up a book when I was about 12, and it was in a Catholic school library, and it talked about the First Crusade, and it had my hair standing on it, the violence of the thing. And these are good religious folks, and this goes back a long way, you know. It's I have a real problem, which you get into tomorrow, for instance. Organized religion is not my friend.
No, and seldom has it been any working person's friend. I'm reminded of the line that we got from Maura last night, who said that the priest's vow of poverty is maintained by the parish, by the parishioners.
Well, a young woman used to be a friend of mine years ago. She used an expression that she had heard from her grandmother, that something or other was heavier than a dead priest, was the line. I had never heard that one before. I said, well, yeah, I guess you got a point there, you know. It's been used and used and used. And things go back so far. Are you familiar with the big sea fight at Lepanto off the coast of Albania?
Yes.
The couple of historians have claimed that the Ottomans never rebuilt their fleets because they were having problems with some heretics on the Persian frontier called Shiites. Boy, things don't change, do they?
Not so much, no.
In a lot of cases, they just keep going and wrapping harder and harder around each other and giving the rest of those of us who are not big believers, giving us ulcers, you know?
No, well, when they're not giving us the rack, thumb screws, or
yes.
maybe a good drowning, or perhaps a nice burning.
Well, you know, that rack might have been a help. I'd be a little taller, maybe, but, you know, what can I tell you?
You are the, Bill, you are an eternal optimist.
Yes, you know, you got to keep, you know, trying to find the truth in something. And what you said about Paterno and the study of classic Greek literature, you know, here we go. Because that's one weakness I have is, ancient history can give me fits because I never, you know, that's something you really have to get in college-level courses.
Well, the beauty of it now is that you don't. It's all out there. In fact, I went and got Polybius's histories, and it's beautiful because he wrote 40 books of his history, and we've got bits and pieces of 39 of them. It's a little bit of a miracle that it's a miracle that any of it survived, because in intervening between the fall of the Roman Empire and the rise of a more enlightened civilization lay the vast wasteland of the church's absolute control of the entirety of European culture. So things like that are preserved only by mistake. For instance, the city of Rome used to be dotted with equestrian statues. I mean, it was the fashion to depict the Caesars on horseback.
Yeah.
And they were all over Rome. Well, devoted churchers, you know, churchy people, melted those magnificent bronzes down because they were eliminating heresy.
Oh.
You know, much as the Taliban blew up the Bamiyan Buddhas in Afghanistan. It was the same impulse. The kind of religion makes no real difference, Bill. But yeah. The only one that survived was the one of Marcus Aurelius. And it only survived because the churchy people, the followers of Jesus, were so stupid that they didn't realize it was Marcus Aurelius. They thought it was Constantine, who had, of course, Christianized Rome. So that statue survived, and it sits now on the Campidoglio, on the Capitoline Hill in Rome, and is a magnificent, magnificent piece of art, and the only one of its sort that remains. But just to continue, Polybius in the beginnings of Book One says that you can't just study little bits and pieces of history and hope to understand anything. That you have to understand something in its totality, and that's why he says he's going to try to chronicle the entire rise of the Roman state. Now he's writing this in what, 160 before the current era.
Oh my.
Basically he's the one who gives us literally a first-hand eyewitness account of the Punic Wars. And it's particularly telling because the final Punic War bears a striking resemblance to our war in Iraq, because it was a complete setup job where there was no way that Carthage could not offend Rome. It sits just to the south and east of the western tip of Sicily, which is what made it such a problem, because the Carthaginians controlled the sea lanes.
Yep.
and had begun moving in on Sicily, which made the Romans very, very nervous.
Well, you just hit the whole reason for the Crusades, too. It was, you know, I don't care what they said about it was to control the Mediterranean Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And the trade. The usual. Money and power.
Right.
The same old, same old. I'll leave you with one. One of my favorites was the Doge of Venice, D-O-G-E, I guess it's pronounced Doge. He led a crusade, one of the latter ones, only he GPS wasn't working right. He sacked Constantinople.
Oh, yes. In fact, I was going to mention to you, Bill, and I know you two deal with some issues, but if there's a way for your technology to deal with it, you need to just go over and start wandering around Finnerman Works.com if you haven't already, because Eugene Finnerman is brilliant, and he's a good friend of the show, and he writes copiously and extensively on the Byzantine Empire. And anybody interested, it's been my experience that most people who are interested in the ancient world know lots about the Greeks before the rise of the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
They know lots about the Roman Empire, and they know next to nothing, at least that was the case with me, of the Byzantine Empire.
Well, I had a good buddy who's Greek by way of Australia. He was a teacher here in Cleveland, and his family was driven out of Anatolia around the time of the First World War by the Turks.
Right.
So he gave me a background on that, which, of course, was, you know, I'm sure he was bent in one direction because his family was chased out of the area they lived for centuries, you know. And, of course, the Armenian situation, too, is not talked about enough. You know, there's just so much, Bob, and it's just boggles the mind. I'm at an age where, you know, a lot of things boggle the mind. It's,
yeah, but you know what? I want to offer up a little bit of just a little bit of reverence and a little bit of little props or whatever because it is obvious to me, Bill, that you refuse to quit learning.
No, because there's nothing else to do. You know, I was going to have a big party for a lot of my ex-girlfriends, and there wasn't enough room for them to come in with their walkers, you know. They've gotten old.
Try the veal. He'll be here all week.
Yeah, I'll let you go. Somebody else is waiting, but, yeah, the organized religion, man, has done more to disorganize this planet than we can count.
Oh, I know, and I've been rereading Marcus Aurelius's Meditations of late. And I find that much more effective, his Roman Empire Stoicism. I find that much more tolerable than a bunch of imaginary mumbo-jumbo. You can really get your hand around this.
Yeah.
Of course, he's still speaking of the gods. And he says this, Bill, and it's just a beautiful thing. Remember how long thou hast been putting off these things, and he's writing this in his later adulthood. Remember how long thou hast been putting off these things, and how often thou hast received an opportunity from the gods, and yet dost not use it. Thou must now at last perceive of what universe thou art a part, and of what administrator of the universe thy existence is an efflux, and that a limit of time is fixed for thee, which if thou dost not use for clearing away the clouds from thy mind, it will go, and thou wilt go, and it will never return. And I read that last night, and I felt like one of those guys in the old Maxell commercial where you're sitting in the chair and the hair's just blowing straight back.
Yeah, that's so many of these things that you learn are like that, and you can't do a thing about it. It's just, this is what happens if you stick your neck out. There's something ready to whack it, you know, with some hard truths that we don't really like. But then again, Bob, I was the kind of kid, I believe I read On the Road. It was published when I was 13. I think I read it at 15.
I read it at the very same age, although a lot of years later. And I think I know where you're going, but I got to get out of here because we are right on top of it. Take care, Bill. Bye now. Thanks to everybody who makes this program happen. That's Bill calling from Cleveland. Thanks to our moderators, our bloggers, our news ninjas, my head writer, David in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy,